This is number 0086, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0086. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Corey Parsons, author of Cooking with Corey.
Food lovers of the world come together around a kitchen, and you can't help but share recipes or stories or ingredients or ideas, and I just love that. I thrive on it. It's my favorite thing.
Sales guru Kevin Graham is on the program. He believes that just about everything is negotiable.
In just about every scenario, you should attempt some form of negotiation. Because in life, everything's in a negotiation to some degree or not. Right now, this very concept I'm trying to tell you or sell you over the airwaves is a negotiation. You're either accepting it or rejecting it, or maybe you're pushing back with some clarifying information or your own take on it. But at any point, you need to have your guard up and actively and proactively negotiate for just about everything, any significant purchase.
And there's Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He has opinions on everything, including the rising cost of electricity.
Our utility company, Con Edison, which is already probably one of the most expensive of any place on the North American continent for electricity, just announced that the electric bills are going to be going up about 12% in one shot. So I'd like everybody who's listening right now to my voice tomorrow, when you go into work, go to your boss and ask for a 12% increase. And see what he or she has to say about that. I mean, it's just absolutely outrageous.
Plus, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0086, is Handel Scandalbury, my brother-in-law. And by the way, the grandfather of Meshach and Malik, who, if you've listened to this show regularly, you know they are the Rugrats who do the Stuff File Christmas show. Thank you very much, Handel, for being the guest later on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, this is a really interesting story out of the small Texas town of Mount Vernon. Now, the owners of Drummond's Bar had started construction on a new building to increase business. Now, the local Baptist church was none too pleased and started a campaign to block the bar from opening with petitions and prayers. Work on the bar progressed right up until the week before opening when suddenly lightning struck the bar and it burned to the ground. I am not making this up, no kidding. Okay, so the church folks were obviously pleased and even somewhat smug, convinced that their prayers had been answered. That was until the bar owner sued the church on the grounds that they were ultimately responsible for the demise of his building, either through direct or indirect actions or means. So suddenly, the church vehemently denied all responsibility or any connection to the building's demise whatsoever. At the initial hearing, the judge in the case said, "I don't know how I'm going to decide this because, as it appears from the paperwork, we have a bar owner who believes in the power of prayer and an entire church congregation that does not." I like that story. That's what you call irony. Meanwhile, last year, the highly qualified agriculture expert Ricardo Salvador was passed over by Iowa State University to run its Center for Sustainable Agriculture, even after the person who finished ahead of him declined the job. Now, according to the Chronicle of Higher Education report, Salvador had committed an unpardonable faux pas during the hiring process by stating the obvious fact that cows everywhere historically eat grass. Since Iowa's dominant crop is corn, grass apparently was the wrong answer. When a Chronicle reporter asked the dean of Iowa State's agricultural school whether cows evolved from eating grass, the dean said she did not have an opinion about that. Okay, an educated dean thinks that cows eating grass is an opinion, not fact. This is a dean. The top of the educational food chain. Enjoy that school pride, Iowa. Enjoy that school pride. Yeah. Elsewhere, Arkeen Thomas, age 19, broke into a home in Port St. Lucie, Florida in March, but the residents were present and the male resident immediately punched Thomas in the mouth, sending him fleeing. Now, minutes later, a woman identified as Thomas's mother arrived, picked up her son's gold teeth that had been knocked out, and left. Wow. Even as a criminal, this guy still has his mother picking up after him. How sad is that? And talk about a major census blunder. The Census Bureau in the United States somehow managed to not count 75% of the residents of Lost Springs, Wyoming, back in 2000. Yes, they lost the residents of Lost Springs. But they have corrected their error with the 2010 census, and we can now officially say the town of Lost Springs has indeed 4 residents, not 1. The cause of the mistake wasn't clear. Lita Price, who lives on the west side of the one-block Main Street, jokes that officials must have counted only her side of town. The State Highway Department says it will change the town's population on its signs. Okay, now, what I want to know is a population sign for 4 people really necessary? I mean, come on. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, so you think your honeymoon went badly? Well, you didn't have to survive 6 natural disasters, did you? Welcome to the true honeymoon from hell. Stockholm newlyweds Stefan and Erica Svanstrom had actually planned a 4-month-long honeymoon with their baby girl and set out on their adventure last December the 6th. Now, things immediately got off to a bad start when they found themselves stranded in Munich, Germany, due to one of Europe's worst snowstorms in recent history. But that was nothing compared to what lay ahead. After that, Stefan said they experienced the devastation of a cyclone in Cairns, Australia, raging floodwaters in Brisbane, and narrowly escaping the bushfires in Perth. Then, just before they arrived in New Zealand, the 6.3 magnitude earthquake hit Christchurch. And then they got to Tokyo just in time to experience Japan's largest earthquake and tsunami since records began. On March 29th, the family finally returned to Stockholm after a much calmer visit to their last destination, which was China. Stefan said, "I know marriages have to endure some trials, but I think we've been through most of them. But the most important thing is that we're still going strong." Aw, isn't that sweet? Pass the tissue. Yeah. Hey, is it possible that this doomsday couple isn't unlucky, but that they are the catalyst for all these disasters? I'm just saying. Just saying. And they brought their baby girl with them on this trip? Has anybody seen Rosemary's Baby, or perhaps The Omen? Just saying. Just saying. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Corey Parsons is a motivational speaker, sports advocate, and author. He lives life to the fullest, and he does it all from a wheelchair. He's also the author of the cookbook, Cooking with Corey, and he joins us on the line from British Columbia. Hi, Corey.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, have you always been someone who cooks?
I've always been interested in cooking and food. I think we all have an inherent interest in what's for dinner. But I used to try to get involved as much as I could. I don't enjoy doing dishes, so the alternative was to help cook. And I really enjoyed getting in with Grandma and doing a little bit of work in the making bread and getting dinner ready and setting the table. And just gave me a bit of a sense of belonging and enjoyment that I could share with my family.
When did you get the first inkling that you could do this well enough to share your expertise with others, and to do this book, Cooking with Corey?
Well, I had a spinal injury 13 years ago. I dove in Lake Okanagan on August 1st of 1998, and I hit the bottom with my head, broke my neck, thought life was over. I didn't think I'd ever be able to walk or talk or cook or anything. And it was a couple of years after that injury, maybe a 10-year-ago period out of my 13 since my accident. And it took actually a trip my father made a trip to Alaska, and he found this specially designed knife that the Inuit, the natives there, used to skin whales and seals and things, and it's called an ulu. And because of my spinal injury at my neck level, it affected my ability to use my hands, and in turn pretty much barred me from the kitchen swinging around sharp knives and things without any control. And once we found the ulu knife, it opened up that door to me being able to participate and then to be able to share my experiences with people with disabilities and without disabilities to show them that, you know, anything is possible and you just have to get in there and give it a bit of a try. And I've never looked back in the last 10 years of cooking. I've had some great successful dinners, lots of dinner parties, and I think the inherent food lovers of the world come together around a kitchen, and you can't help but share recipes or stories or ingredients or ideas, and I just love that. I thrive on it. It's my favorite thing.
I got to tell you, just sharing that story with about the knife, the first thing I kept thinking is, you have quite an amazing dad.
I certainly do. I have an amazing family, and I wouldn't be anywhere in this world right now without the love and care and support that I've received from my family and my friends.
So at what point did you decide, not only can I cook, but I've got to do a cookbook?
Well, it was about 5 years ago. I was sitting around, as I do in my wheelchair, and I was trying to figure out how I could get back into the restaurant industry and the food industry, which I absolutely adore. And because of my spinal injury, I wasn't really able to go back into the restaurant carrying around cases of wine up and down stairs up till 2 or 3 in the morning. But I still wanted to participate, and I still wanted to share my knowledge and share it with other people who might feel intimidated in a kitchen that, you know, anything is possible, and if I can do it, hell, you can do it too. And it was an opportunity came up to make a short little pilot video to perhaps approach the Food Network about a cooking show, trying to incorporate a disabled cool guy in a kitchen having fun and teaching people along the way. And the economy did a little bit of a hiccup, and we didn't have a lot of support for any kind of television appearances. And so I just started compiling all of my recipes that I would be using on a show, and I started putting them on paper. And great friends of mine said, why don't you go write a cookbook? We love your food. Everyone loves your food. Why don't you give us something we can all have, you know, on our own nights off where we want to make something, and we can support you in that way. And that's really how it began.
So what is considered your specialty or your favorite?
My specialty favorites. I think just fresh fare, let the food speak for itself. I don't tend to overly style or overly manipulate the foods themselves. Fresh, great, local ingredients we find in everyone's backyard. I do grow my own garden, my own herbs, my own vegetables, and I have a great environment around me that supports all of my protein needs. So, yeah, lamb farmer, beef farmer, chicken, duck, moose, bear, deer, I mean, sky's the limit when it comes to your environment. If you kind of know where to look within the community and the markets that are around you, food really speaks for itself. And for myself, I'm a really, really big fan of seafood. I live on a very, very beautiful island, Vancouver Island on the west coast, and we're surrounded by the freshest local seafood in the world.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you're also a motivational speaker. I understand you go to elementary schools and talk to the students. What do you talk to them about?
Well, I have a bit of a game plan when I go into the different schools. I speak at everything from kindergarten all the way up to fourth and fifth year university students. And some corporate employment has come my way as well with the RCMP and with the Olympic Committee in Vancouver for the 2010 Olympics that I was participating in as a reporter and doing a bit of a documentary. And the game plan changes, of course, between who I'm speaking to and the ages of who I'm speaking to. But generally, it's to believe in yourself, approach life with a thought, and don't dive in head first. Test the waters a little bit, of course, and practice a bit of caution and safety. I really want the kids, especially at the high school level, to know that, you know, I'm 36 right now, and I was 23 when I had my accident. I was just like every other 23 or 18 year old guy who thought he was 9 feet tall and bulletproof and nothing ever bad was going to happen to me. And that's just not the case. And I think it just takes maybe a little bit of a moment of a young man or a young woman's life to see somebody in a situation that they can relate to who's telling them to use that caution. And it's not coming from a parental or, you know, an overseer or even a teacher or something. You know, don't do that. You're not allowed to do that. I basically just offer a bit of encouragement to be self-governed and to be aware of your environment.
To be successful in all the things you've done, especially since your accident, you have to have a very positive outlook, generally speaking. Is that something you always had? I mean, even before your accident, was part of your personality what helped you to get through all that you got through after that dive?
I want to say yes. as I said before, the support of family and friends has really been there, you know, as a support. But in the deep down part of my soul and my heart, I've always been a hard worker. I've always tried my best. I've always put my best foot forward and worked as hard as I can to achieve the goals that I set for myself. That being said, you know, I was always up for a challenge, and this one seemed like it was a bit more of a challenge than I would have asked for, but being that I had it to deal with, you know, you really just have to do the best with what you have and know that you tried your hardest and really be proud of that and give yourself that reward and that credit to know that you're doing a great job. And that might be a great job for somebody who has never done something like this before or has never tried cooking, but it still worked out. You didn't burn the house down. You know, there's something positive to be taken away from every experience in life. And when you're faced with something that has obviously quite a few negative aspects to it, you really have to pull in those positives and hang on to them, you know, with both hands and just keep persevering and keep trying the very best you can.
You have a website, which is coreyparsons.com. What will people find when they go there?
There's there's a splash page there that'll give you a tiny little bio on where I was born, where I grew up, some of my stories of love of food, and then a quick little jaunt over to an email and a PayPal link to actually be able to order the cookbooks or to email back to me and ask me questions or give me feedback on recipes or thoughts on the book themselves.
And you mentioned that you started this whole thing because you were trying to get a show on the Food Network. Now that you have the book out, it's sort of like putting the cart before the horse. Could you do it the other way around? Now with the book, can you get the show?
That is the absolute goal. I do look forward to that opportunity re-arising. I do have some great contacts within the networks and the industry. And, you know, they never said no, even in the beginning when money was tight and there was no new money for new budgets. They never said no. They said, what an exceptionally new and exciting idea, and we want to talk to you more. So this was actually probably the best way, in hindsight, to look back on this. It's probably the best way it could have turned out. I think I would have been very intimidated and shell-shocked to suddenly have a camera in my face and be in front of millions of people to watch. The book has given me the opportunity to really hone my skills in the kitchen, really get comfortable with media and people, and expressing myself and knowing who I am that I'm expressing.
Well, you're a very inspirational guy, and there's nothing more inspirational than a cookbook. So it's a combination therein. The book is called Cooking with Corey. And Corey, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
I want to thank you very much, and I'd also really love to thank all the listeners. That's really what motivates me, and the more people that I can, you know, reach out to and connect with, it may be motivate and inspire a little bit and relate and educate too. You know, there's a ton of information out there that's ready for people who want to step into a kitchen, whether it's their first day or they do it every day of their life. There's always something to be gleaned from a well-put-together book, and I couldn't be more proud of this one, and I hope the world loves it.
Corey Parsons, author of Cooking with Corey. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the Stuff File program page for this show, which is show number 0086, and you'll find links to Corey's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll hear from Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And we'll talk about some sales tricks that you can learn that might help you get that better deal when we talk to Kevin Graham and just a matter of moments. But first, more Stuff File news right here on the Stuff File program. Police in Lincoln, Nebraska say they got a surprise when they pulled over a pickup truck outside of the city recently. Now, 4 people in the front seat were there. All of them were naked. Okay, now, the part that baffles me is not the 4 people naked part, but the 4 people in the front seat. Anyway, when asked what they were doing, one of them said, "I think we're getting in trouble." Okay, personally, I don't see the crime here, and the sheriff's department admits that no laws have been broken since there's no law against driving while naked. But while driver Nicholas Borgman escaped the driving while naked charge, the open container led to a DUI, and that's in addition to citations for having too many people in the front seat and no seat belts. Come on, everyone knows that when you're naked, those things chafe anyway. Yeah. Okay, for a country famous for their historical inquisition, it's surprisingly easier to escape from Spanish prison than we thought. All it takes is a fax machine and a devoted wife. Police in Madrid have rearrested 57-year-old Jose Carlos Serna, who was found hiding in a hollowed-out sofa, now that's a good one, in his hollowed-out sofa, at his home after twice escaping from prison by fax. He simply had his wife fax in forged release documents, and it worked. Both times. Each fax was followed by a phone call, purportedly from a court official, corroborating the release order. It doesn't speak well for the competence of your average Spanish corrections officer, does it? Yeah. In Newport Beach, California, former police officer Edward Justin Laporte has been arrested for allegedly showing up at a massage parlor wearing a badge and a gun and demanding a free rubdown and cash for his inspection of the business. While he got a 30-minute back rub, he's also accused of requesting a frontal massage and $200. The manager of the Golden Spa was suspicious about the supposed quality control check and called Lake Forest licensing offices. Laporte fled when a real inspector arrived and started asking questions. He was later tracked down by his license plate. He's pleaded not guilty to all charges. I sense for him it's going to be an unhappy ending. Yeah. The driver of a vehicle involved in a hit-and-run accident claimed that it wasn't him driving the car. His alibi, he was on what he called a random hookup, a date with a woman he had just met in a bar. The car is registered to his wife, who told police that he did have her car at the time. Richard Hartquist, a North Andover, Massachusetts attorney, yes, he's a lawyer, claimed the car had been stolen but never reported it. Investigators apparently didn't believe Hartquist's story. He was charged with leaving the scene of an accident involving personal injury, obstruction of justice, and driving with an expired license. They always have expired licenses in these stories. Why is that? Hartquist is now looking for a new career, a new auto insurance policy, and I'm probably guessing a new wife. Now forget texting and driving. Perhaps we need laws governing brushing your teeth and driving. In New Zealand, 65-year-old schoolteacher Cherie Margaret Davis busted up her car real good after setting her cruise control and attempting to brush her teeth while driving. Yes, she crashed the car, and yes, she ended up in jail. She slammed into a rock bank by the side of the road, and police say she had a blood alcohol level almost twice the legal limit at the time. Interestingly, she invoked the seldom-used Christchurch earthquake excuse, telling the judge she had been upset at the time because her employment was affected by the Christchurch earthquake in February and she was having family problems. Ah, yes, life is difficult, but hey, she had a lovely smile. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here with me, Peter Anthony Holder, on the Stuff File program, just in case you didn't know, barking at police dogs is not allowed. Police in Mason, Ohio, arrested 25-year-old Ryan James Stevens, who will be charged with a misdemeanor for barking at a police dog. Officer Bradley Walker heard his canine dog barking uncontrollably inside his patrol car while he was investigating a nearby car crash. When Officer Walker went to check on the dog, he found young Mr. Stevens allegedly making barking noises and hissing at the animal. The best part is that Stevens insisted that the dog started it. Of course, alcohol seemed to be involved, as Officer Walker said Stevens appeared highly intoxicated. The dog started it? Really? Did it eat your homework, too? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Kevin Graham is an author, speaker, and expert on sales and leadership who spends most of his time teaching sales professionals how to work with customers. He's here with us now to switch sides to reveal some of the best sales tricks that you can use to turn the tables on salespeople. Hi, Kevin.
Hello there. Thank you for having me, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. First of all, why do you want to give away the secrets? Not that we don't mind.
Well, frankly, I just enjoy talking about it. I've been in sales my whole life, and working with the customer and pursuing win-win negotiations is a lot of fun for me. So
in your estimation, then, it doesn't necessarily have to be something that is adversarial, because you find people on both sides, consumers and salespeople, who seem to feel that way.
It's true. And those days, I think, are passing quickly. You really need to partner with the customer, work through what their needs and wants are, if you're going to get what you need and what you want out of the transaction.
You mentioned that it's changing quickly. Is part of it just generally the economy that we've gone through in the last little while, or is it just changing times in general?
Yeah, I think in general there's the sophistication of people. People are aware of some of the old sales tricks, you know, for the last 20 or 30 years people have used. And today's approach, whether it be in a B2B kind of corporate environment or even consumer sales, it's more about partnering and listening to the customer and the prospect about what their needs are so you can align to that.
Oh, okay, so a lot of people, their biggest fear is being ripped off. So let's talk about that. How do you avoid the most common rip-offs experienced by people?
Well, whether you're trying to buy a car or an appliance or a home or anything really, you've got to understand that you're a bit of a novice, right? You're the consumer and you're walking into an industry that over years and decades has honed their process down to a science so that they can get maximum value out of each and every opportunity. And you've got to be prepared for that. There's some basic skill sets, basic tactics and strategies from negotiation, and then you step back and look at it from an overall perspective and how you can approach it.
Now, here in North America, we tend to have a different mindset than some other parts of the world. we don't haggle, per se. We don't barter. We don't try to make a deal with someone. We usually go in, and the price that's written is the price that we pay. Are we wrong? Are other cultures right? Or is there a mixture of the two somewhere that we should be doing?
In just about every scenario, you should attempt some form of negotiation. Because in life, everything's in a negotiation to some degree or not. Right now, this very concept I'm trying to tell you or sell you over the airwaves is a negotiation. You're either accepting it or rejecting it, or maybe you're pushing back with some clarifying information or your own take on it. But at any point, you need to have your guard up and actively and proactively negotiate for just about everything, any significant purchase, that is.
And therein lies the word significant purchase. I mean, you just can't walk into your friendly neighborhood Walmart, for instance, and say, I want to pay lower than that.
Yeah, there's certain machines you're not going to get them to budge much. So, no, I don't think that'll work.
Okay, so where are some of the places where negotiation, you mentioned earlier car, for instance, I would assume appliances are another. Where are some of the places that negotiation actually pays off for the consumer?
Well, I'll tell you, just in small businesses, it's in anywhere. You know, the old adage, you've got to ask to GET. Just by asking for a discount. I was in an Adidas store at the Irvine Spectrum, and they're about like a Walmart. I mean, they're pretty much set in their ways, and they're going to do try to sell you stuff and maximize an opportunity. And I bought $200 of a shoes and a ball for my son and a ball for me. And just when he's checking out, I go, hey, can you give us any kind of discount? You gave us 10% just by asking for it. So you've got to ask to GET.
Well, and that brings up another point. You talk about a place where you bought these shoes. Usually behind the counter you have, let's be honest, some kids who are working their way through school or whatever. They're not people who are necessarily invested in that business and therefore might not have the power to make a deal. Or is it a situation where their boss says, look, if somebody asks for something, here's what you can give them. Is that how it works?
Well, you hit it on the nail on the head. And in some organizations, they are empowered to work with the customer, and they have some discretion when it comes to pricing or credits or things of that nature. It's really about approaching it from a fun perspective. You know, people only respond one way in life, and that's in like. They respond in almost the exact way that you approach them. So having the right approach and asking in a non-threatening manner, it sometimes will just let things slide through nice and easy. No, that's not the case in a tough negotiation, but certainly the case in a casual type of heckle or mention for a discount, right?
Mm. Now, a lot of people, part of the problem is they don't negotiate because either they're afraid to, they feel intimidated, or they're just plain not good negotiators. So I understand there's some simple negotiation tricks, things like the flinch, the nibble, the call girl principle. What are these, and how do they work?
And these are really simple. The flinch, I'll give you an example. A few years ago, several years ago now, my wife and I were at a swap meet, and we're looking at these beautiful mirrors. And here's my wife's approach. Oh, I love that mirror to be perfect. And the guy says, it's $180. Oh, it's just beautiful. And, of course, there's sales tax, and we can box it up for $20. Oh, it's fantastic. It'd look great. And for $40, we can deliver it locally. Now, my approach would be different. I'd be looking at a different mirror, knowing I want to buy that one over there on the side, and say, well, how much is that one over there? I'm disinterested. I'm not really motivated. I'm certainly not in love with it. And he says, $180. And I flinch. And what a lot of people don't recognize about the flinch is it should be both a verbal and physical expression. So I throw my arm to my chest, $180, are you kidding me? And he says, but if you're paying cash, there's no sales tax. And I do it again, $180, and he says, but we can box it up for free for you, and if you live locally, we'll even deliver it for free. Look at the difference in that purchase between my wife's approach and my approach. And the flinch doesn't always have to be over the top where you're falling off your chair, but any type of subtle flinch is important.
Okay, so what is the nibble?
The nibble is what you get when at some point in the process, in any transaction, there's a point where psychologically and maybe unspoken, there's a recognition that both sides are going forward. That's the moment where you can start nibbling and getting small things, because in the grand scheme of things, they're really tiny and no one wants to disrupt the progress that the negotiations had. And also, on the other hand of these tactics, you've got to be prepared for the other side to start nibbling at that time, too.
I think I may have inadvertently used the nibble just recently in dealing with a car purchase, but that's interesting. The call girl principle, what is that?
The call girl principle. Now, I don't want to offend anyone here because I'm not condoning illicit behavior, but there are sales lessons to be taken from the working girl profession. The call girl principle, simply stated, is that the value of a service rendered diminishes rapidly once the service has been performed. The value of a service rendered diminishes rapidly once the service has been performed. You know, if you're in sales and you're working with a customer and they need a proposal today and they'd kill for it, or they need you to throw another body on a project so you can finish it by Friday, and they'd love you to death if you could get it done, that's valuable to them. But once you've done it, it's a lot less valuable to them, isn't it? They no longer just love you to death. They're just kind of happy, right?
Right.
And that's where another negotiation gambit comes into play. Quid pro quo, this for that. Because anytime you're giving something up in a negotiation, you should be getting something back. And along the lines of the call girl principle, you should get agreement before you give it up.
Mm. Now, earlier I said one of the things is people seem intimidated. How do you get past the fear when you're making a deal with a salesperson? In other words, how do you feel more confident?
Well, certainly success breeds success, and confidence breeds confidence. So the more you try things and have success, see what's working, what's not working, the more you'll be able to expand your own range of skills and expression, if you will. But there's a lot of people that'll say in any significant purchase, you're not getting your best deal unless at some point you get up and walk out. Because that's when you're really testing, especially in a car buying situation. You've haggled down to the bare minimum. It's not good enough. You get up and walk out. Trust me, they're going to sharpen that pencil as much as they can at that point.
Would it be a good idea, if you don't have confidence, just to simply try perhaps learning how to haggle or learning how to deal on something that you're not that invested in? In other words, if you lose it, it's not a big deal. And just to see what you can get and see where you can go?
That's like anything in life, isn't it? And here's another thing is, don't think about it from your perspective. Think about it from the other side's perspective. And that's what's so great about negotiating from a win-win standpoint. If I'm buying yarn at the local store or fabric or something at the local fabric store, you know, they want to sell more. They want to sell stuff they haven't bought. If you think of it, put yourself in their shoes and think of it from their perspective and ask questions, well, what if I bought more? What if I that? They'll start to open up and show you hints of where there's flexibility in their pricing or how they conduct their transactions to give you more for your money.
You have a website which is called hittingthenumber.com. What can people find out by going to your site?
Well, we do have a free guide on there that anyone's welcome to get to. You just plug in your email, and we never share anyone's email with anyone. It's a free guide called Book More Meetings. So if you're in sales or maybe you're trying to find a job and you need to get more interviews, that guide will help you. It's quick 10 steps on some tactics and some scripting to help you land and fill your calendar with more meetings.
Yeah, it was most interesting stuff indeed, Kevin. I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
I'm excited to be on the air with you. Thank you for having me.
Kevin Graham. You can check out his website at hittingthenumber.com. That's hittingthenumber.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the Stuff File program page for this show, which is show number 0086, and you'll find links to Kevin's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Last year, the National Insurance Crime Bureau reported that insurance fraud costs American consumers $30 billion a year. That's an enormous amount of money. But fraud isn't the only problem adding to our insurance costs. Listen to this. In 2007, Connecticut resident Richard Schenkman allegedly burned down his beach house after a divorce court awarded the house to his estranged wife. As he was awaiting trial on arson charges, he was also charged with kidnapping, holding hostage, and threatening to kill his ex-wife before allegedly burning down a second home. The insurance company that wrote the policy on the first home understandably granted the proceeds from the fire to his wife. But amazingly, he sued the insurer, not to seek proceeds from the fire, but for emotional distress over how they investigated the fire. Let's be fair, suing for emotional distress might not be fraud, but it will still cost consumers. And unfortunately, this case was just approved for trial. Learn how we all pay for lawsuit abuse. Go to centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have once again with us Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Now, I know it's not getting too hot there in New York because it's only the beginning of April, basically. But I understand the mayor has a plan when it comes to electric bills for the summer.
Right. He's a classic example of a politician, and I would say a very rich politician because, as you know, and many of your nice listeners might know, the guy is a billionaire. He's the owner of Bloomberg Media, so he's really very, very, very rich. In any event, our utility company, Con Edison, which is already probably one of the most expensive of any place on the North American continent for electricity, just announced that the electric bills are going to be going up about 12% in one shot. So I'd like everybody who's listening right now to my voice, tomorrow when you go into work, go to your boss and ask for a 12% increase and see what he or she has to say about that. I mean, it's just absolutely outrageous. But in any event, his advice to people is just use less air conditioning, which is kind of interesting because as the food prices go up, I guess his response would be the same, just eat less. It just shows that some of the politicians, or maybe I should say all of the politicians, don't seem to know what it is to try to make the rent bill or the food bill each week.
Well, speaking of New York billionaires in politics, surely you must have an opinion on all this talk of late of the Donald perhaps running for president in 2012.
Well, I generally, as I enter into my twilight years, I've started to get more and more out of politics. And the reason for that is that I just think they're all so terrible. They really are. The thing that intrigues me about this guy is he's kind of like different. I mean, I don't mean different in the sense that he's not a wheeler dealer. But as a businessman who was a wheeler dealer in business, I don't know. I think that maybe if he's for real, he might start, if he's elected, of course, running the United States as a businessman. I mean, not that we have to turn a profit, but our economics are in such a mess that this guy might be able to have a different approach. I don't know. I don't think he can be anything worse than the kinds we've had. So who knows? Let's see what happens. He's playing around right now by saying, maybe I'll run, maybe I'll run. He ought to cut that out and say whether he's not going to run. The other thing is what he's hopped on the bandwagon about, and he's the first major possible candidate who's done it, is to raise the issue about whether or not Barack Obama was actually born in the United States, meaning Hawaii. And that's an intriguing type of a thing, because the ramifications, if it should happen to turn out that he wasn't really, really born in Hawaii and means he isn't really, really an American citizen, we would have the most unbelievable mess on our hands in terms of whether or not a lot of the laws and things would be in effect. Now, of course, the minute you say that in the United States, you're accused of being a Bertha, which is really a pretty rough kind of a term. And many people up to this point have been very hesitant about saying it really publicly the way Trump has. He's raised the issue. As a matter of fact, today he claimed he's even sent investigators out to Hawaii to see what they can find out. So my point about that is, ooh, I love confusion in politics. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out.
Well, I always believe that if it's a dead issue. If he really weren't born in the United States, Hillary's gang would have found that out when she was running against him.
No, not so, my little chickadee. And the reason for that is that they could have had something worse on the Clintons. And American politics is always quid pro quo. I know that question's been raised, but I wouldn't be surprised, and I certainly don't have any inside information, but I think you could get enough stuff about the Clintons, which would have been, hey, you tell that tale to us, we'll tell it to you. But, Peter, the fact of the matter remains, and this is the mystery. He has never shown his birth certificate. And the question in my mind, more than anything else, is why doesn't he just show the thing? The thing that's circulating on the Internet is not an official birth certificate. The document that he's been showing, you couldn't use to get a marriage license or to get a driver's license. That, to me, is the mystery. Why he doesn't just say, here's the real birth certificate, now everybody shut up and go away.
Well, it's a good thing he doesn't have to drive. Let's get back to your fine state. I understand there's a dentist who has called the cops because he received a mysterious UPS package?
Yeah, well, he did, and when he opened it up, it had 31 pounds, which he found out afterwards, of marijuana. Woo! Could he have gotten high? But he did exactly what I would have advised him to do, and that is he called the cops came, and they took it away. If he had tried to be a cute wise guy about it, kept it, maybe tried to sell it to people, I think he would have been caught, his career would have been ruined, he would have ended up in jail, and on and on and on. So, kiddies, the moral of the story is, it pays sometime to call the cops.
But he could have saved a lot of money on Novocaine.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, the parking meters in New York City, they really are a gold mine, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. They're more than a gold mine. They're a gold mine, a silver mine, a uranium mine, you name it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And they are just cash cows bringing in millions and millions and millions of dollars to the city, as is all of the summons in the city. We are just under a blizzard of tickets. And this all goes back to Bloomberg's doing, the mayor, because I think he looks upon it as a cash cow. We get tickets in New York City for everything, whether you're an individual or whether you're a person. And, a business. And what I say to many, many people, New York is a wonderful place to visit. Come on down, take a look at it. It's really wonderful. But, boy, you wouldn't want to live here.
And there are some sex workers who decided to rally at Union Square.
Yeah, they claim that there should be more support, no pun intended, for sex workers around the world to protect them because of the way they're mistreated and abused. And they were complaining that the United Nations doesn't do enough about that. The United States doesn't do enough about that. And I thought to myself, it's interesting that they would be complaining to two governments that do to their people what the cool girls do to their clients.
And I understand you've written more about this on your blog too, right?
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. Now, I want to end off on a similar note to what we started on, because we talked about air conditioners to start things off. So I want to talk about something else that can be cooling and yet can be more costly. Is it true about ice cubes?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I mean, it really is, but maybe it's not hard to believe. I can remember a number of years ago when some of the very fancy schmancy restaurants in Manhattan started charging for bread and butter. And then they started charging if you wanted water, just water to drink. Well, now there's a few places in New York that have actually started charging for ice. If you're getting a mixed drink and you want some ice cubes in it, there's going to be an extra charge. Now, this doesn't really surprise me, and I'll tell you why it doesn't surprise me. A few weeks ago, I went into a deli, a bodega, that's a little grocery store, to get a bagel with a schmear and a regular. A bagel with a schmear is a bagel with some cream cheese on it, and a regular is a coffee that has milk and two sugars. I'm just explaining to your listeners, you know, the language of New York. So I said to the guy, let me have a bagel with a schmear and a regular. He said, do you want it toasted? I said, no, I don't want it toasted, just let me have it. He said, oh, okay, because if you wanted to toast it, it would have been another 25 cents. So I said, are you kidding me? The guy said, no, we now charge people 25 cents if they want to have their bagel toasted. And let me tell you something, Peter, you don't mind if I call you Peter, I was completely convinced that the guy was giving me a wind-up or he was kidding me. But then I looked at the sign behind him that said, toasting 25 cents extra. So I guess, look, you try every way you can to make a few extra bucks.
So it is very expensive to be in New York City. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and that's why I just said, are you listening to me, man? I said, come and visit here, but I forbid you to. Let me put it this way. If you told me you're moving to New York, I'd go, ha, 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 ha.
But it's still one of the greatest cities in the world.
Oh, it is. It is. Just come and save me.
Okay. People, if they want to take a look and see what you're talking about, they can go to your website, which is www.gabby.com, correct?
Yes, indeed it is. Has a lot of interesting stuff in New York. And as I always say, if somebody has a question about New York, just send me an email. I love answering questions about New York.
And that email address is peter@gabby.com. Peter.
You are correct.
I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. We're in the home stretch, but first, a couple of Stuff File news stories before we get to our idiot of the day. The manager of the Channel Islands Cooperative Store in the British territory of Jersey acknowledged to BBC News in November that a shopper's complaint was justified and that refunds would be made. The customer believed that she was being overcharged by about £5, that's about $8, because while weighing fruits and vegetables, the clerk had been leaning over so that her breasts accidentally increased pressure on the scale. Wow. And in Salt Lake City, Utah, corrections officer Robert Monson, age 38, was charged in December with having sex with a female that he had met while she was in lockup. According to the woman, the couple's trysts were not impeded by her ankle monitor, which Monson insisted was sexy. In fact, shortly after the monitor was removed, the relationship ended. Wow, there's nothing else to follow that story up with other than the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
When you're a burglar, it's unpleasant to get busted. But it's downright humiliating when you're busted by a 6-year-old that you stupidly decided to take along during the crime. Police in San Rafael, California, approached 27-year-old Diane Lydia Ellison, who was standing outside a neighborhood home with two children aged 3 and 6. Officers had received a call about a burglary in progress. Diane flatly denied that she had entered the home and said she was simply caring for a friend's kids. But that's when the 6-year-old girl spoke up and said, "Diane, you know you were the one who told us, don't tell you were the one who went in through the front window." That was enough for officers, who arrested Diane on suspicion of burglary, child cruelty, and possession of a small amount of methamphetamine. They also found a laptop computer from the home stashed in a nearby shed. San Rafael Corporal Todd Berenger said it was priceless, adding arresting officers couldn't believe their ears as the child explained what happened. Now, why would someone take two kids under 6 on a burglary run, especially when one of them is rather chatty? One reason, and one reason only, she's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0086. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. You'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that number is 0086. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you'll find a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now.
Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.